Hello and welcome to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Jake Neer, sitting in for Stephen Henderson today. After more than a century of attempts, lynching is now a federal hate crime in this country. But before we get into the particulars of what this means for prosecutors and the broader story that it tells us about our country, we want to get into a little history here. The stark rise of lynchings in America did not occur prior to the Civil War, as some might think, at least in the way that we think of it now. That rise occurred after that time period, and particularly after the end of Reconstruction into the early 20th century. Reconstruction is noteworthy because it was a time when America was beginning to try to live up to its highest ideals, making progress toward true equality and equal opportunity. Several amendments were passed, giving black men access to civil rights. The number of black businesses rose, educational attainment rose, and the amount of black male representatives immediately jumped in number. But after President Lincoln was assassinated, his vice president took off, and things took an ugly turn. This all leaves us with questions about why the rise of violent lynchings began in the first place, and why Reconstruction ended at all. To talk more about this, what led to the rise of lynchings in America, and why it took so long for an anti-lynching law to pass, we have Eric Foner here. He is the DeWitt Clinton Professor Emeritus of History at Columbia University, and he specializes in the Civil War and Reconstruction, slavery, and 19th century America. Professor Foner, welcome to Detroit Today.
It's very nice to talk to you.
Yeah, it's great to have you here. This is a really weighty and important topic today. And before we get into some of the meat of the history here, I want to talk first about the word lynching and defining that. What do we mean when we say lynching?
Well, lynching is the sort of extra legal murder of a person, usually by a mob, not just by one individual. Often planned in advance, advertised in advance, attracted large crowds of spectators, mostly against African-American men, although there were instances of other types of people being lynched, mostly in the South, although there were lynchings in other parts of the country also. But for a century, we usually date lynching as starting around 1880, as you mentioned, after the end of Reconstruction. And, you know, there are various estimates, but probably 3,000 to 4,000 Americans were lynched, that is, killed by mobs in the period from 1880 up to the 1950s or even 60s. It's a dark mark on our history, let's say, which is an understatement. And it really makes you wonder about how deep respect for law, judicial process, et cetera, really goes in our culture.
Mm. And I want to get to that, again, that big rise in lynchings and where we think of that really beginning in a second. But I also want to talk about Reconstruction. For those who don't know, you know, what is Reconstruction as we defined it, and when did it start and why?
Well, in a simple answer, Reconstruction is two things at the same time. One, it's a period of American history, the period after the American Civil War, sort of like the Age of Jackson or the New Deal. In other words, a particular time period, usually dated 1865 to 1876. Different historians date it in slightly different ways. But Reconstruction is also a historical process, the process by which the United States tried to come to terms with the results of the Civil War, the most important of which being the destruction of slavery in the United States. The issue of Reconstruction was what was going to be the status of the 4 million freed slaves. Were they going to have equal rights along with white people? Were they going to have the same civil rights, economic opportunities, political participation, etc.? As you mentioned, Reconstruction is a time period where tremendous gains were made in toward the ideal of equality in this country. But that very fact sort of initiated or led to a violent response by white supremacists in the South, often violent, but we don't really call that lynching because it was political violence to sort of try to overturn these Reconstruction governments, which were established on the basis of interracial democracy and equality. Reconstruction was one of the very hopeful moments in American history when it seemed that we were trying to live up to the ideal of equality. Unfortunately, due to violent opposition and a retreat in the North from enforcement of equality, Reconstruction ended. And it was followed eventually by the Jim Crow system, which we, you know, talk about in the South. And lynching is really considered part of the Jim Crow structure in the South. It's sort of the violent edge of it. It's the way that people who tried to, tried to combat the new system of white supremacy were often dealt with in Southern life for decades and decades.
Yeah. And this period, the Reconstruction has been described in various different ways. Some scholars we've had on the show in the past have said it's a second founding for the nation. You've called it an unfulfilled revolution. I'm curious about that description of it. You know, why think about it in that way as sort of it's not just a historical period. It is again this sort of attempt to remake the entire country.
Yeah, unfinished revolution is what I called it in one of my books, which, fair enough. In other words, what I'm trying to say there is that many things were accomplished, but then a lot was taken away, and that the agenda of Reconstruction, of equality in numerous aspects of our life, is still not been fulfilled, and that, you know, we're still debating the issues of Reconstruction today, 150 years later. Who should be a citizen? Who should have the right to vote? What does equality mean? What about the possibilities of interracial cooperation? Those are on our agenda today as they were during Reconstruction. Mm. And so that's why I call it unfinished. We're still trying to figure out how to deal with the end of slavery in this country.
Wow. Yeah, that makes sense. I'm curious also, about this, again, about the Jim Crow period. And in some ways, what you're saying here is that Reconstruction, or at least the ideals and the process, you could say, is continuing today. Jim Crow and the rise of lynching, the rise of the KKK, seems to, I think a lot of people think of that as a time when Reconstruction ends and there's a finality to it, and there's this birth of a really a racially regressive nation, especially in large parts of the country, but across the country as well. What spurred especially lynchings and the KKK and things like that?
Well, the KKK is really a phenomenon of Reconstruction. It's, as I said, it's sort of this political violence directed at taking away the political rights that African Americans were granted after the Civil War. As you said, the Constitution was rewritten to give black men the right to vote. Equality before the law was written into the Constitution for the first time. You know, the concept of equality does not exist in the original Constitution. It had to be put in there in the 14th Amendment during Reconstruction. As I said, lynching is one part of this system that we call, in a kind of quick way, Jim Crow. With the system involved taking away the right to vote from black men, even though it's guaranteed in the Constitution, no longer in force, cutting back enormously on black education in the South, an economic system in which all the good jobs were reserved for white people and blacks were relegated to the lowest paying, lowest skilled jobs in the South, and racial segregation eventually, where, you know, there's this whole two different worlds created in the South for black and white people. And lynching is sort of part of the enforcement of this system. It's a way of saying, you know, don't think you're going to get a fair trial in this region, or don't think you're going to get judicial process if you're accused of a crime. Mm. In fact, lynching is part of this degradation of the of the judicial system in the South, which also was reflected in the rise of the convict lease system, where thousands of black people would be hauled up in court for minor little offenses. They were found guilty, often they weren't, and then put to jail and then leased out to work, almost in another form of slavery, for plantations and lumber yards and railroads and all that. Another form of unfree labor, using the courts to send black people to this kind of work. So, as I say, it's a comprehensive system. It's not just segregation, which we often associated with, but basically the basic rights of black people put into the Constitution after the Civil War were just abrogated for a long, long period of time, from the 1890s all the way up to the Civil Rights era and the second, sometimes called the Second Reconstruction, the movement of the 1960s. So lynching is part of an even bigger story, which is the retreat from the enforcement of the Constitution for many, many decades in our country.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Jake Neer, sitting in for Stephen Henderson today. I'm speaking with Eric Foner, who is a professor of history at Columbia University, specializing in the Civil War and Reconstruction, slavery in the 19th century here in America. And we are talking about the end of Reconstruction and the rise of lynchings in America. Now, in 2022, many decades and many years after the end of this period that we're talking about, we finally have an anti-lynching law on the books in America, but it took that long. We want to hear from you. What does that make you feel about this country, the fact that we now do have an anti-lynching law on the federal books? And what does it mean to you and how you think about being an American and being part of this country that it took this long for that to happen in the first place? What do you think needs to be done to usher in a more equitable America, and how can we best live up to our ideals of equality, equal justice, and equal opportunity? The number on the phones is 313-577-1019. Again, that's 313-577-1019. You can also leave your comments on Twitter. Just use the hashtag Detroit Today. We'll try to work you in that way as well. And Professor Foner, I want to talk about, you know, again, we've now seen progress in an actual, you know, we actually have an anti-lynching law here in America, but I want to talk about where that process began and why we've had so many blockades to that in the first place. Talk about right. When people started talking about anti-lynching legislation and what happened to those attempts.
Right. Well, first of all, during Reconstruction, laws were passed by the Congress to try to protect the rights of black people and protect them from this kind of violence. They weren't called anti-lynching laws. They were civil rights laws. They were enforcement laws, that is to enforce the rights put into the Constitution in the 14th and 15th Amendments. They were on the books. Later, the Supreme Court kind of abrogated most of those laws, took away from the federal government. Because, you know, violent crime is mostly prosecuted in state courts in this country, right? If someone is murdered, that's a state offense, and the state government is supposed to prosecute you and punish you for committing that crime. But unfortunately, after Reconstruction, the South was in the control of white supremacists, and so people who murdered black people were often never put on trial, or if they were put on trial, they were quickly acquitted. You know, the most famous example going way into the 1950s, which was mentioned at the beginning here, was Emmett Till, the teenage boy who was murdered in Mississippi. He was put on, the murderers were put on trial, for a state crime of murder, but they were quickly acquitted. It took the jury, all white jury, only a little while to say, no, forget it, basically. These people are not guilty, even though they were obviously guilty. And later on, some of them actually said they had been guilty long later. But, you know, so the question is, what about a national law? Well, the problem is, as I say, the problem is the power of the South in Congress, and particularly the filibuster. to get a law through Congress with the filibuster required a two-thirds vote in the Senate to stop debate, you know, to stop people from just talking forever and preventing a vote. And many times anti-lynching laws were proposed. It was proposed they were, you know, to make it a federal crime, a national crime, not just a state crime. But they could never break the Southern filibuster. Southern representatives were all white after 1900 until way into the 20th century. They were all Democratic, and at that time the Democratic Party was the party of white supremacy. Today it's kind of, this has been shifted, and it's the Democrats supporting black rights and Republicans often not particularly interested in that. So you could not get an anti-lynching law passed the Senate filibuster. Over and over again that happened. And so, you know, there were some people who said, well, look, this is a violation of the rights of the states. The states are supposed to prosecute violent murders. But, of course, the southern states, as I said, proved unwilling to do that. Now, there are other laws out there. There are civil rights laws which make it a crime to conspire to deny someone their civil rights, etc. But simply making this kind of murder a federal crime has never happened until just the other day, as you say. So it sure took a long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, as you mentioned, the filibuster, this has been obviously a political hot button issue, you know, for more than a year now. But I'm curious, you know, I mean, that comes up a lot is that, you know, the filibuster has been used time after time through history as sort of a way to keep racist laws or prevent anti-racist laws from going on the books. So this is a pretty timely discussion.
Yeah, you know, in the debates now, you know, you have the people who support the filibuster in the Senate. The filibuster does not apply in the House. The House, a majority can cut off debate. It's in the Senate where it traditionally required two-thirds vote. Now it requires 60 votes, but the supermajority to cut off debate. And yes, the filibuster historically in our country has been used for one purpose, and that is, as you said, to prevent laws which protect the rights of black people. Don't listen to those senators today who say, oh, the filibuster is really there to encourage cooperation between the parties, because if you need 60 votes, you're going to have to get both Democrats and Republicans, and therefore it creates a more cooperative setting in the Senate. It hasn't worked that well. The Senate is not exactly functioning in a cooperative way right now, right?
Right.
But also, that's not what it has been used for in our history. It is a racist practice. It has always been used to prevent legislation to protect black people. That's why the filibuster is still in there. And but, of course, it makes our country look, how shall I put it, horrible. And also hypocritical. We stand for equality. We believe in justice. And yet for a century or more, you know, we did nothing to stop this mass murder of black people that was taking part in the South. Thousands of people lynched over the course of 1880 to 1950 or 60. So, you know, one has to look at that history and be embarrassed for the real, you know, course of events over the course of history in our country.
Yeah, horrified. Absolutely. Before I let you go, Professor Foner, I want to ask you, you know, I know that your specialization is history here, but I want to talk to you about, you know, what we're talking about today, which is this anti-lynching law that President Biden just signed into law. I'm curious what you think of the approach here and what it means for the country.
Well, it's a good thing, obviously, that now lynching basically doesn't exist anymore. You know, there are, of course, people are murdered here and there, but the phenomenon of lynching, which involved, as I said, often these lynchings were announced in advance. A guy is in jail, and the newspapers would start putting him, so-and-so is to be lynched tonight, 6 o'clock, come to the main town square. You'd think the police might go to stop it, but no, they often took part or just turned the other, you know, looked the other way. Railroads sometimes put on special trains to bring hundreds or thousands of white people to watch these lynchings. And, you know, when I say murder, yes, but it was done in the most brutal, violent way, where people were tortured first before being killed. They were burned alive. Their bodies were cut up. Photographs were taken of these murdered people and sold on the streets and, you know, sent around the country. It was ghoulish. It was violent. And it really makes you wonder about the, you know, people brought their children right. to see the lynching of a person. What does that tell you about the moral standards of a region where this can happen and where nobody is ever prosecuted or convicted for taking part in these kinds of events?
Right.
So maybe the passage of this law will be a deterrent for, you know, against future examples of lynchings.
Oh, that's such a horrifying thought. Professor Eric Foner, I mean, horrifying that it could happen again, I should say.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Professor Eric Foner, professor of history at Columbia University, who specializes in the Civil War and Reconstruction, slavery, and 19th century America. It was wonderful to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining.
I won't say I'm happy to discuss this, but I was glad to be on the show to talk to you about it.
Absolutely. Thanks again for your time and your great insights here. Coming up on Detroit Today, we'll continue a conversation about lynching, and we'll talk about what this means in practical terms in 2022 in terms of this anti-lynching law and what it means in terms of bringing justice to Americans.